Today we're going to be talking about stage-structured and size-structured models, again, matrix models, following up on the topics we've discussed earlier. Mostly we've been talking about age-structured models, or Leslie matrix models. Now we're going to talk about some variations on that theme. First, we're going to talk about a relatively simple modification of an age-based or Leslie matrix model. For long-lived species, an age-based Leslie matrix model can be very large. For example, some of the sea turtles can live to over 50 years. So if you have a Leslie matrix that has one entry for each year class, that can be a 50 by 50 matrix, which is not only a big matrix and moderately cumbersome to work with, it can be hard to supply the data for that. If you want to estimate the transitions for specific age classes, you'll need some replication, so you need to be able to age the animals well and get sufficient data on each age class to accurately estimate the transition. Often that's quite hard, and so simplifications are made to use average survival rates for the older age classes, and sometimes for younger age classes as well. Also for long-lived species, the oldest age can be hard to measure accurately. If the population is a relatively modest size, and especially if it's difficult to measure ages, it can be hard to tell what the actual oldest age is likely to be, just because there can be a lot of chance variations in the survival, especially of the older groups, and there's going to be small numbers. So it can take a while before you very accurately identify what the oldest age is, and therefore what the size of your life table and your matrix model should be. Well, if annual adult survival is similar across, for example, adult ages, you can create a single adult stage. So we'll lump them all into one group. I'll show you an example in a second here. This will simplify the analysis, and you need less data. You can use averages for adult survivals. For example, here's a matrix model for painted turtles based on some data collected here in Michigan, in southeast Michigan. And in this based on a Leslie matrix model, all the adults have been lumped into a single age class in the last column. There are seven columns in the matrix. The first six, you notice, there are zeros in the top row. So this population of painted turtles did not begin to reproduce until age class 7. In this typical Leslie matrix model, we have our survival probabilities on the subdiagonal. So this entry 0.82 here represents the probability that the first individuals in the first year class will survive to the start of the second year class. And likewise here from the second to the start of the third, and so on. Notice this last entry at the bottom here is on the main diagonal. So what this represents is the probability that adults who are now in the age class 7, the probability that adults will survive 1 year and remain in that adult age class. So here we have the annual survivals leading up to adulthood. Here's age class 6, and the estimate is about 82% of the 6-year-olds survive to become adults, and then the survival of adults is approximately 82% as well. It would be pretty unusual if it was exactly 82 all the way along there, so you can tell that there was some averaging done to estimate these percentages. Notice also that the number of female hatchlings produced per female is pretty low. So for the females to replace themselves, it's going to take several years of reproduction to, on average, be able to reproduce themselves. Okay, so the thing to notice then is that this is no longer a straight age class model, because now we're lumping individuals of several ages together in this final category, an adult stage. We can still use our matrix analysis techniques and calculate the stable age distribution of painted turtles. In this case, we get the stable stage distribution for that final stage. Because the survival was 82% all the way across, these bars now steadily decline from the whatever numbers there were in the first age class. The second one is 82% of that, and so on and so on and so on. And there's continuing 82% survival in the adult class. But that goes down every year because of survival. But it's added to because these 82% of these age 6 turtles move into the adult class. Does that make sense? Nobody's spoken up yet. Okay. I don't know how many of you have canoed down the Huron River or walked by some local ponds. You often see turtles sunning themselves on logs or on the bank. Casual impression is that large turtles seem to be more common than smaller ones. Why is that? Why might you not see more small turtles? First, let me introduce another term here, cohort. A cohort of individuals are those individuals born in the same year. As you could see from the previous graph, each cohort of turtles has a steady decline in numbers with age. But in casual observation, we tend to group turtles by size, not age, when we look at them sunning themselves on a log out in the river. Smaller turtles are growing with age. So they're getting older, but they're increasing in size fairly rapidly. So the older juveniles also appear to be relatively larger. So that the numbers pile up in the larger size categories. So in reality, there is a steady decline with age. Let me go back to the previous graph here. If we had a complete age structured model, this graph would continue. We'd have 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and so on, up to 20 or so years is probably getting close to the maximum age for painted turtles. And we'd see a steady decline in these histograms out to about age 20. But now we're lumping those all together, and it stacks up to be a pretty tall bar here. So there's maybe 17% of the population represented in the smallest turtles. over 30% of the population are classified as adults. So when you walk around or paddle down the river looking at turtles, large ones seem to be more common. And that's the explanation. It really is the case that there are more young ones than each age class of old ones, but they pile up in the size categories. Let's talk about elasticity of the population growth rate. We've mentioned this before. Let me say a couple more things about it and show an example. For the same proportional change in each matrix element, elasticity measures the proportional change in the growth rate lambda. Because we're talking about proportional changes in the growth rate of each factor, the elasticities sum to one. The interpretation is that the elasticity reflects the proportional contribution of each matrix element to the population growth rate lambda. So high elasticity means a big effect of that parameter on the population growth rate. For painted turtles, adult survival has the greatest effect on population growth rate, and fecundity has the least. A paper by Heppel, she added together the elasticities for what she called juvenile turtles, juvenile survival, which was age classes 1 to 3, and the subadults, which were age classes 4, 5, and 6. And this column represents the elasticity of adult survival. The first bar here represents elasticity of fecundity. So if the proportional changes in each of the elements of that matrix were the same, fecundity has a relatively small, and the smallest of these four here, the smallest effect on the population growth rate. Adult survival has the largest. In many other turtle populations, it takes an even longer time before the females become mature. Blanding's turtles, it's something like 13 to 15 years. In snapping turtle populations, it can range from 13 to 19 years for the age of first reproduction. In that case, in those cases, adult survival is even more dramatic. A comparable histogram for those situations would be much taller, and the elasticity would be approximately 70%. So adult survival is overwhelmingly the biggest contributor to population growth rate, which means that mortality of adult turtles is really critical to keeping those populations viable. Elasticity analysis can help evaluate management options. Suppose you had two different management plans you were considering. Under one plan, you would estimate that adult turtle survival would increase by 5%. And another plan, juvenile survival would be increased by 25%. Which would be the most effective in helping that population grow? Well, suppose we're talking about a population that's declining at 5% per year, so our lambda value is 0.95. And suppose we're talking about one of those longer-lived species of turtles where the adult survival elasticity is 0.6, juvenile survival elasticity is 0.2. We can use this approach to compare the different plans' effects on lambda. We can rank the plans by their potential effect on population growth rate. So So for plan A, we multiply the adult elasticity by 5%, which is the projected increase in adult survival. We get 0.6 times 0.05, or a 3% increase in alpha. Ide?
At some point, I take it, Haley turtles become non-reproductive, right? When they reach the upper age of the adult class. Is that right? Is that... I mean, because the initial graph, the number looked really low for, you know, 0.528, so it's like a fairly low value. So, am I reading that wrong?
There's kind of two separate things going on here. I think there is, at very old ages, there is some senescence and perhaps a reduction in fecundity. But that's not why that number is low. Mainly, it's because there's approximately, I think for that population, something like 6.6 female eggs per female. But the survival of those eggs in that first year was very, the eggs in the hatchlings, the survival was very low, so that only about half an egg, half of a female egg survived. So actually there's 12 or 13 eggs laid, about half of those are females, but only one egg every other year survives that first one female egg every other year survives that first year of life. Things like raccoon predation are really, really severe. So the numbers of eggs laid is higher than that term reflects. It's largely due to first year survival. Another question?
Oh, no, that makes sense, because I actually thought that they have more eggs than six. It seems like a small group.
Right, that's six female eggs.
Okay,
right.
Female eggs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the total clutch is bigger than that. Yeah, and in cases where it's been looked at closely, there does tend to be an increase in clutch size with female age. But sometimes it's hard to detect in all the noise.
Because I was thinking in harvesting that I guess what I was getting at is I was thinking, I know, like, you know, you could place maybe size, you have to allow harvesting beyond a certain size if that's somehow correlated with age class. If you could say those were no longer reproductive. And that, you know, thereby sort of work in ability to sustainably harvest some turtles. I know some cultures do want turtles. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I've been getting some email messages from some of the turtle experts around the state here, and Southeast Asia is apparently a hot spot, one of the hot spots for turtle evolution, and there's a large variety of species there. They're coming under increasing pressure from human consumption. And especially as the economies improve in Southeast Asia and all over Asia, turtles are harvested for meat, and it's severely depleting the turtle populations. That additional source of mortality on those populations, because they're taking the larger adults, puts a severe cramp on the population growth over there. Well, and over here too. The poaching of turtles in Michigan, and actually just even incidental harvest, is really hard on the populations. They just can't sustain much additional mortality on the adult stage. Okay, good question. Good question. Let me get back to follow up this comparison here. The way to do this is to have the adult elasticity value times the percent change that you think is going to be from this plan, 5%, and that works out to 0.03. So that's a 3% increase in survival, 3% increase in population growth rate from that plan. So 3% of the nominal rate of 0.95 brings it up to 0.9785, would be the value projected under Plan A. Under plan B, you take the juvenile elasticity times a 25% increase in juvenile survival, gives you a 0.05% increase in lambda. So lambda would increase by 5% to this 0.9975, bringing it almost up to a stable population. So under this comparison, plan B would be better for the population. But notice that it's in order to have the effect on the juveniles be better than the effect on adults, it had to be very substantial increase in the juvenile survival. Okay, so this is an example how this kind of analysis can help you, excuse me, help you evaluate different management options. So this kind of lumping of adults into an adult stage is usually helpful, especially for long-lived species, because it can simplify analyses, requires much less data. You can do a lot of averaging over the observations that you do have, and avoids the problem of the oldest age. Notice that we didn't have to specify how big that matrix is. We don't really have to know what the oldest age of the individual is. We're just assuming that 82% of them keep surviving and surviving and surviving. By the time you get out to, say, 20 or 25 years, it's a very tiny number that are actually surviving. But you're able to include that in the analysis. One thing you need to be cautious of is that this can overestimate the speed of response to some perturbation. Suppose you had a change in the population size and you wanted to do a matrix projection and see how quickly it would come back to that same stable age distribution. If you have all the adults lumped in a single stage, you aren't going to see that actual wave of population changes as it ripples through those older ages. It's all going to be lumped together in that single adult stage. So it's going to give you impression that the population has come back to its steady value faster than it really does. The population actually takes longer to achieve a new stable age distribution, stable age distribution than the lumped model would indicate. Okay, size matters. For many populations, an individual's size is more important than its age in affecting survival and reproduction. And that's certainly true in many fish and in trees. Like in forests, there can be a lot of fairly old saplings that just haven't gotten enough light. They can be old, but they're not at the right size to mature. For some species, it's hard to determine age. A lot of invertebrates, it's very difficult. And in some plants, it's hard as well. But many species have clear stages into which you can lump the different types of the population. In insects, it's pretty clear, defined eggs, larvae, pupae, and adults. For many other arthropods, eggs and juvenile instars and adults are pretty easy to define and categorize them. Much easier to do than telling how old they are, what their age is. So you can use a model based on size or stage rather than age class. I think we've mentioned the names before, but certain names are often associated with different types of matrix models. Leslie matrix model is the one based on age, and Lefkowitz matrix model is the one based on stages. Here's a citation for Lefkowitz's discussion of population growth grouping organisms by stages. Here's an example of a stage-based model for an insect population. This is a species of insect where we just have three stages, egg, larvae, and adult. We have a transition probability of survival from egg to larvae, and from larvae to adult. There's a couple extra loops here. Here's the probability of a larva surviving and remaining as a larva during the specified time interval. And here's the probability of surviving the next time step and staying in the adult category. And then there's the offspring produced by those adults feeding back into the egg category. So this is the Lefkowitz or stage-based matrix corresponding to this life cycle graph. There's the term for reproduction is only in the adult category. We do have terms on the diagonal, and that's these loops of probability of surviving but remaining as a larvae or staying as an adult. That's the two terms on the diagonal. Does that make sense? Seem straightforward? Good. So for both age-based and size or stage-based models, the time unit is fixed. That's really one of the keys. It's the time unit that's fixed for each time step. The width of the size categories is up to the biological investigator, what he thinks is most appropriate. But the time step is selected depending on the data that you have. So for example, you can pick a time unit, like 1 year for turtles or many other animals. For ones with faster population growth, you might choose 1 week for insects, or maybe 1 day for certain daphnia in lakes. Then you estimate the transition probabilities, the probability that an individual in one stage is found in the next stage one time unit later. Dana?
If you were using those really small time steps, like back in the diagram on the previous slide, why would you...
Jumping ahead, excuse me. There we go.
Why wouldn't you account for the probability of the egg staying as an egg?
Good point. That's right. If your time unit was sufficiently small, then there might be a loop here as well. That's a good point, right? In this one, it must be the case that for this analysis, the time step corresponds to the time it takes an egg to hatch.
Where would that go in the matrix?
That would go right here in this first element, the probability that the first stage remained in that first stage. Good question. Anybody else? I hope you can see that picture okay. One of the first stage-structured models for plants was developed for teasel, Dipsacus sylvestris, and it's in the teasel family. You've probably seen these heads. They're often used in the dried flower displays. They're pretty neat. Teasel's monocarpic, big bang reproducer, often found in disturbed areas where the soil is disturbed and the seeds that are in the ground get a chance to grow. It's often seen along roadways. Looks a lot better on my screen than it does on the big screen here, but you can see the little dots if you look here closely. And as you're driving along, actually, US 23, this is near US 23 in Washtenaw Avenue. You see teasel quite a bit. The plants grow with their leaves in rosettes. This would be a rosette with leaves coming off a central place here. And here's my little Swiss Army knife to give you an idea of its size. This is a relatively large rosette. Small rosettes grow into large ones. Here's a one with really big leaves. When the rosette is large enough, the plant reproduces. It sends up a stalk, flowers, and the seeds are produced. So here's the formerly the flower on a big stalk. You can see some of the rosette leaves at the base, and then there's a different kind of leaf that are produced on the stalk itself. The age at which teasel reproduces varies with the growing conditions, and size of the plant seems to be a better predictor of reproduction and survival. Size is better than age. Pat Werner and Al Caswell did some studies where seeds were sown in several plots and followed for several years to estimate the survival probabilities and the seed production. They divided the teasel population into six size categories. First one was dormant first-year seeds. Second was dormant second-year seeds. And then small, medium, and large rosettes. The small ones were about an inch in diameter. Medium rosettes, about an inch to 8 or 9 inches in diameter. And large rosettes, bigger than that. And then the last category was flowering plants. Each flowering plant in year T can produce 1 year later over 300 dormant seeds. It can also produce some seeds that will, by 1 year later, produce about 3.5 small rosettes. Each flowering plant also will have some seeds that will make about 30 medium rosettes. And some of those seeds that land in really favorable conditions can actually produce a large rosette by the next year. And it's monocarpic. The flowering plant dies after reproduction. There's no survival of the adults. This is what the life cycle graph looks like for the teasel population. We can start over here with flowering plants. They produce large numbers of dormant seeds that sit in the ground. Some of those don't germinate and stay a second year in the ground as dormant seeds. The flowering plant also produces some seeds that become small or medium or large rosettes. Some of the dormant seeds can germinate and produce small, medium, and large rosettes, and likewise for the second-year dormant seeds. And then there are loops for groups for the small, medium, and large rosettes, indicating that they can stay as small, medium, and large, or grow to the next larger size, or with an arrow pointing towards number six there, they can flower if they get big enough. This is the corresponding size-based matrix model for teasel. It has a different look than the other models we've looked at. There's a lot more of the elements that are filled in with something besides zeros. Let me point out a couple things in the far right column. This last column is the one for flowering plants. Notice that there's a zero at the bottom element there in the lower right. That's because this is a monocarpic species. It flowers. None of those flowering ones survive. So the survival to the next period is zero. This is in contrast to what we just looked at before for turtles, where we put a term in here to account for the fact that those adults were staying in the population. Here, they're all dying. Some of those flowering plants produce dormant seeds. They don't produce, of course, any second year dormant seeds, because you have to be a dormant seed for 1 year before you can be a second year dormant seed. So that's what this transition over here. Then, but it can produce some small or medium large rosettes. And the rest of these terms indicate that the transitions to the different sizes, the ones along the diagonal are the probability of staying in that particular size. The ones on the subdiagonal are the transitions to the next one. Okay, you see how that corresponds to the life cycle graph there? Good, I'm seeing quite a few heads nodding. Good. We can do an eigenvalue analysis with the stage-based models, just like we did with the age-based models. To remind you of the definition here, a vector X with the property that matrix multiplication is equivalent to scalar multiplication, so that the matrix times that special vector is equal to a scalar times that special vector, for some scalar lambda, is called an eigenvector of the matrix, and the scalar is the eigenvalue. So the analysis is the same as for age-based matrices. The right eigenvector of the matrix is the stable size distribution, or stable stage distribution of the population. The left eigenvector gives the reproductive values for each size or stage of the population, and the dominant eigenvalue is the discrete growth factor, or lambda, for that population. So it's just the same when we're talking about these stage-based matrices. For the teasel population, the population growth rate, lambda, is 2.322 per year, so it's more than doubling each year. Each female is producing 2.3 females per year. At the stable stage distribution, 90% of the population is in dormant seeds. The flowering plant has the highest reproductive value. So here's the numerical results of the teasel matrix analysis. Here's the six stages and their names. Here's the stable stage distribution. Notice that about 64% of the population is in the dormant, first year dormant seed category, and almost 27% of the population is in the second year dormant seed category. Among the green part of the population, the largest fraction is in the medium rosette category, and the flowering plants are the smallest numerical category of that whole population. And if once it reaches this stable stage distribution, these would be the proportions that you'd expect. The last column shows the reproductive value for an individual by stage. And as you might expect, the flowering plant stage has the highest reproductive value. Okay, any questions? Okay, and summing up here, let me briefly mention some of the assumptions of these age and stage-based matrix models. Both assume that there's a linear effect of the number in each category on the numbers of births and deaths. Okay, we're having constant constant values for survival and reproduction per individual. We're not including any kind of density dependence yet in these. And the parameters are constant. But of course, the real world is not really linear, at least not all the time. And conditions do change. So you have to be cautious in interpreting the results of these matrix manipulations. You only are calling this a true prediction about what's going to happen if you believe that these things are true, that there's no density dependence and that the parameters are going to remain constant. You are going to have constant survival and fecundity. If that's true, you will be able to make a prediction. But if it's not going to be true, it still represents the description of the current population conditions. And as those numbers exist today, this is the direction in which that population is moving and where it would be heading if things did remain constant. So I think that's a real take-home message here, that it's still valuable. Even if it's not a true prediction, it still gives you insight into what's going on in this population, what parts of the population are contribute most to the population growth rate, give you some ideas about what's important to consider in the management of those populations. That's the last one. Yeah. Okay. Any further questions? Have a good weekend. Next week we'll talk about human populations and allometry. I think these guys will want you to turn in your forms. If you said anything, do you still want them? Did you say anything?
Didn't find a single nest that survived raccoon predation. Didn't find any turtles that were younger than 10 years old.
Oh boy.
That's just a real lifestyle that depends on keeping trying of reproducing and eventually hoping to get a successful clutch.
Raccoon population is so high.
Somebody else asked about that too, and I can't remember who it was.
I don't know.
Have a good weekend.